You're listening to the Mindbrew Chats podcast, bringing you stories and honest conversations about mental health, well-being, and life. From Kuching, Sarawak, grab your favorite brew and join us now.
Hello, folks, and welcome again to Mindbrew Chats. Today, we have a special edition. It's Conversation with Community Champions. And I'm your host. This is Mac Lean here. You can call me Mac. Laura, Hazel, how are you two doing?
Doing great, Mac.
Doing good, yes.
Very enthusiastic crowd we have here tonight. Okay, guys. It's great to see the two of you again. I know Malaysia is going through this very weird period right now, and you know, but we just want to talk about people who bring cheer and hope to the communities they are in. So folks, today we have with us a very special guest, and we'd like to bring on board YB Michelle Ng. How are you doing today?
Hi Mac, I'm good.
You good? So let's just put something out first. Do we address you as YB Michelle, or can we just go with like Michelle? Or
Michelle is fine.
Michelle is fine?
Yeah.
Okay. So for Mindbrew's chat today, we want to talk to Michelle about this work she has done in her constituency of Subang Jaya. So it is fantastic work, and it is with working with people who have mental health issues. It's a mental health initiative that she has put together and is currently ongoing in her community. So, and then we also have Laura. Laura is the founder of Mindbrew, which is also a mental health initiative based in Kuching. So we now have two people who are able to just tell us about their experiences, their journey in setting up mental health initiatives in their communities, in Subang Jaya and also in Kuching. And to start off, maybe Michelle, could you just introduce your work and probably tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So my name is Michelle. I'm the State Assemblywoman of Subang Jaya. It is the largest state constituency in Selangor, and if it is in Selangor, possibly Malaysia. I'm 30 this year. And yeah, we set up what is called SJ Care Warriors, Subang Jaya Care Warriors, being a mental health community initiative.
Subang Jaya is the biggest constituency, I think, in Malaysia, that says. And Laura, could you introduce your work and a little bit about your background?
I'm a pharmacist by profession, and I specialize in medications that treat conditions of the mind. I've been involved in mental health advocacy for about 4 years now. I volunteer with a Mental Health Association of Sarawak. And as Max said, I founded something called Mindbrew.
Wait, thank you. So you probably know Laura from our Mindbrew Chat podcast. And guys, we have episode 1, episode 2 on Spotify, so do check us out. This is a special edition because tonight we really want to hear from Michelle. So Michelle, what motivated you to take up the mental health cause?
Yeah. So when I was voted in, which was 2 years ago, I was 28 years old. And what I was immediately taken aback with at that time was the number of suicide cases that was happening in my constituency. And what was even more startling was that the affected people were around my age, from as young as 14 years old, to, you know, 20s, to their 30s. And so that was really shocking for me, because I didn't expect that being an assemblywoman, this would be one of the issues that would be so prominent in Subang Jaya. And one of the more One of the events that really stuck with me was when I had to go to a funeral of a resident who whose daughter decided to take her own life. And it left such an impact on me because I remember going to the funeral parlor and just thinking to myself, I have no idea what I'm going to say. And this person is so young, and I don't know anyone who has lost a family member that way. And immediately when I arrived, I really didn't know what to say except to just be there for the family and just listen. And so what struck me at that time was how the family knew that there was a lot going on in this young person's life. And they knew that she needed help. But what was repeated time and again was how they did the best that they could with the knowledge that they had, which was not necessarily wrong, because they really did care and they really did love her. And you know, I'm sure that they did everything that they could. So in that moment, I'm thinking to myself, Is this something that can be overcome? Is there something that I'm missing in this puzzle? Is this whole thing about mental health so complicated that no one can really decipher it? Or is it just a matter of identifying what needs to be done and trying to bridge that gap? And so, yeah, that's how we literally started this whole mental health journey and brought us to where we are today.
Was this very early on in your role as an assemblywoman?
Yeah, it was. I think it was within the first few months, actually. And you know, I was immediately met with this kind of experience. I remember even at that time, I haven't even employed my staff yet. Like, the office wasn't even set up. And this was something that I had to deal with. And immediately right after that, it was just compounded by case after case, literally either an attempted suicide or an actual suicide once a month, you can say that. And so as a 28-year-old then, it was a lot to take in, and there was so much that I felt I needed to do at that time, but felt really clueless about how to go about it.
Yeah. I mean, just enlighten us, how big is Subang Jaya in terms of residents?
Okay, if you're talking about the number of voters, it's 75,000. Number of households, 63,000. So if you multiply that by an average of four per household, you're looking at about 240,000 plus minus.
So this was in itself a problem that has been there even before you came into the picture, right?
Yeah, it was. And I had Hannah, who was the previous state assemblywoman, and she was very a big advocate of mental health as well. And she did allude to this being quite a prominent problem in Subang Jaya. But I didn't know how big of a scale she was talking of, she was referring to, until I actually stepped into these shoes and really found out about it for myself.
It strikes me to hear that it starts from the age of 14, and you're talking about 14 up to probably young adults. Before they're 30, is this the group that is kind of problematic?
Yeah, I mean, that was the bigger group. There were the elderly as well, but in my experience, and I'm not saying that this is reflective of what's happening nationally, this is just my experience as an assemblywoman. They were from the majority of teenagers and also young adults, and followed by senior citizens. So we did have a few cases that fall into that category.
Was this how long after that incident did you form SJ Care Warriors?
Oh, I would say about a year after. So it wasn't something that clicked immediately, like, oh, I need to set up a platform and then, you know, figure out what to do from there. I think it was more of a process of discovery that we had to go through before reaching that. It started off actually with a forum that I organized because, like I said, I had no idea. I have never experienced or even delved into this world about mental health even before this. And so I felt that the first thing that we needed to do was to gather information. And so that is where we felt that the best way to do it was to bring people who are well-versed with this area, whether it was professionals or policymakers, or the authorities or people living with mental health conditions, to come together to just talk and exchange information and see how we can go ahead from then. So it was actually at that point in 2018, we immediately organized a forum together with Tsinghua University that we brought all these people together. And that's where we started to establish connections and, you know, started to exchange knowledge about what each other, what we are all doing, and figure out this space before I, as an assemblywoman, identify where exactly we wanted to take this.
I'm just curious to know that you said a lot of the suicide cases actually happened in a younger demographic. Is it a coincidence that there are a lot of private universities and colleges in your constituency?
Yeah, I think so. So for the benefit of our listeners, Subang Jaya has 5 major college or universities. You know, we have Tsinghua University, Monash, Taylor's, Inti and SEGI. So you would get a larger concentration of young people and students in Subang Jaya from all across the country who come here to study.
Is this demographic similar to what we have in Kuching, Laura, when we deal with mental health issues?
We don't really have the statistics or the data to show what percentage of each demographic is dealing with mental health issues. But we do see younger adults coming forward now to seek help, correct? Hazel would be able to tell you a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, working where I am in the hospital, there are more and more teenagers coming forward to seek help, and a lot of university students as well. So I think there are younger people coming seeking for help, but at the same time, I agree as what Michelle said, that there are also elderly who are coming forward dealing with things like grief and whatnot. So there are a number of, I would say there are a lot of different awareness that brings people forward, but mostly are from the city areas, mostly are from people who are in the universities, who have access to counselors, or schools who have access to counselors that are able to come forward at this point.
I think what's really a good thing here is they have access to help when they need to, you know, and then there are people who are talking about this. There are people who are creating a platform for people to come forward and to be open about what they're going through. Michelle, I'm just curious, who came up with the name SJ Care Warriors?
So if we were to wind back a little bit,
yeah.
Basically, after the forum that I referred to, we established connections with psychologists and psychiatrists. And immediately what I thought we could do, and this space wasn't occupied yet, was to train people in terms of how to deal with situations that arise, which require them to have knowledge about mental health. You know, just giving them the language, giving them the knowledge about how to identify signs of depression or anxiety, you know, and then if you do, what do you do about it? And so we started having this conversation with a few professionals, and I said, look, I'm thinking about doing something like this, and I read that there are these programs all across the world. What about Malaysia? Is there something that we can do here? And they said, well, it's funny that you would ask, because in fact, there is an academician who has come up with a very localized program. And this person is Mr. Pekai Xuan, who teaches in University Tunku Abdul Rahman. And so I felt, wow, okay, why haven't we explored this, or why haven't we, you know, expanded this? And they said, well, if you want to have Subang Jaya start as a platform, we can definitely consider this. And so it was a suicide prevention program, and that's how we started off. By this time, there wasn't a name yet. We didn't know what to call ourselves. It was just ad hoc training that we thought of doing from my office to just train community leaders. And later on, there was this person, her name is June. She messaged me on Instagram, and she basically said, Michelle, we noticed the work that you are doing, though I am curious, why isn't it that we are talking about more early intervention, because to deal with suicide is rather at the tail end. And so if you deal with it from the outset, it is more likely that your program would be more impactful. And I said, interesting that you would say that. Why don't we meet and see where we can take this? And so when I met June, you know, she had all these ideas, and I felt this enthusiasm from her. And so I said, June, is this something that you can help me out with? Is this something that you can, you know, figure out? Because she was talking about branding and a platform and this and that. And I said, it sounds all good, though I really need support to get this across. So is this something that you would consider helping us with? And she said, yeah, sure. And after a few rounds of getting volunteers together and people who were interested in this idea, we started talking about what to call ourselves. And so SJ Care Warriors was considered, SJ being Subang Jaya, care being something that, you know, is an overarching principle, overarching theme of what we wanted to do, and Warriors because it's something that we really want to champion. So that is basically, yeah, how it came about.
I like the fact that there were people who came together and saw what you were doing, and they kind of like, oh, you know, we could chip in here, we could help you out, you know, and talking about branding, talking about awareness, and just pushing it along. Who are your biggest supporters?
It's funny that you ask, because these are just a bunch of people who are not professionals at all. Most of them have their own day jobs, actually much like what you guys are doing. And they have seen the need for mental health advocacy, either through their own experiences or through the institutions that they represent or the companies that they go to. And so they felt that this was something that really needed attention and just came forward and said, I want to help. So it's this mismatch jigsaw puzzle of people that you get, from students to professionals. We have consultants, we have, you know, CEOs. So of course we do have psychologists and psychiatrists, to moms, to literally a range of people that you can think of.
And I really, really love that, because it shows that there's ownership in the community. They saw a need and they rose to fill it. I really, really love the idea.
I like what we are doing in Kuching is also similar in the sense that it's a group of people who see the need and they just come together. And we all come in from different fields, so to speak. But we all see the need that there should be this conversation going on, and then that people should be safe and secure enough to come forward to talk about what they're going through. So it's fantastic. You were mentioning moms and students, you know, wow, you know. But how do you get the buy-in? I mean, you're talking about parents, right? Parents buying in into the idea of this conversation on mental health and all that. How do you do that?
Yeah, so Subang Jaya is a very active community. They do have very close-knit groups in terms of residents' associations and Rukun Tetanggas and what we call JKP, so Jawatan Kuasa Penduduk. And they have, so each community leader would have like a group that they mentor, or a group that they take care of. And so when you have, like what I said earlier, incidents of suicide or attempted suicide happening in a community, information gets exchanged. And so people started looking out for cases like these in their community. So I suppose what was previously not really spoken about, because people became aware and started exchanging information, there was this realization that came about, also coupled with the fact that these communities are really active. So active in a sense that they, well, before the MCO, before COVID, they met regularly. And you know, they would have fellowship regularly, whether it is just to celebrate one of our national cultural events, or, you know, just to meet and you know, be with each other. So it was in these platforms that I would usually be invited. And it was there that I started really talking about mental health and the need for it and what I was experiencing as a state assemblywoman. And so we were averaging about, well, last year, about 1,000 events a year. And so you can imagine, it was literally being a broken record and going to every single event and talking about why it's important, what's actually going on in the community, what we are actually doing and the impact that we were producing. So it was very tiring on our end, but we realized that that was the way to do it, to just keep repeating why it is important. And because of that, the community became aware and things like this spread. The trickle-down effect is actually real. The ripple effect is real. But the key to it is to be consistent in what we do to ensure that the momentum keeps going.
Yeah. Laura, isn't that similar to what MindBrew has been doing before COVID?
Yes, that's it's similar, but it's not quite similar as well. I noticed when Michelle was talking about earlier intervention, suicide being like towards the end, the last port of call, so to speak. MindBrew was formed to address earlier intervention rather than early intervention. Because you know, to tell you all a bit about my personal motivation for getting involved in mental health advocacy, because it's an important part of why we're doing this. And it struck me when you said that, you know, a lot of teenagers are going through these issues. Because for me personally, I've been going through mental health issues for the most part of my life. And as early as 13 and 14 years old, I was aware, or rather I remember this overwhelming sense of heaviness, of sadness, of anxiety, of not knowing my place in the world and being very confused. And because of this burden that I was feeling, I was very lonely. I felt like I felt that there was something wrong with me, that I was broken. And I do believe that if I had someone to talk to or someone to guide me through this whole process of telling me that, you know, it's okay to feel this way, it's none of it is your fault. There are ways that you can learn to cope with what you're going through. It's things that are happening around you that are not
in your control. It's okay. And I didn't have that. It wasn't until I was in my late 20s to early 30s that I started getting some answers. And around that time, I also started getting involved in community work. I would organize community events. And through those events, I would meet different kinds of people. A lot of them were, well, within the demographic of late teens to early 20s. And I noticed that a lot of them were actually going through the same sort of issues and feeling the same burden that I had gone through. And because of that, I thought that, you know, maybe mental health advocacy, being that I work in the field anyway, is something that I could get involved in and I could contribute to, and in some way perhaps lessen the pain that people are going through, or at the very least shorten that journey of struggle and self-discovery. So that's how I got involved in Mental Health Association of Sarawak and how I got the idea of starting MindBrew.
So MindBrew is essentially normalizing mental health conversations.
That's the idea of it. We noticed that people had issues, but they didn't know how to name those issues. They didn't understand what they were going through, because I think in our society, we don't talk about feelings. We don't talk about emotions. It's more of, are you achieving enough? Are you doing, getting good grades? Are you, you know, involved in all the extracurricular activities that's going to look good on your resume, your university application? But no one tells you that if you're feeling anxious, you're feeling scared, angry, frustrated, or sad, it's something that you can deal with. That's something that you need to go through, but you will learn, you have to learn how to cope with. So these kind of these group of young people, I feel, are not the ones that are going to come forward for, oh, I have a mental health issue, because they don't even know it. And that's why MindBrew was designed to be a safe space for people to just learn the vocabulary and learn to identify what they were going through.
Do you both feel that, you know, at least in Malaysia, we don't talk enough about it? About mental health?
What do you think? I would think so.
You would say so, Hazel?
Yeah. Stigma is a big thing, especially in Malaysia. Because I was working in the Klang Valley for about 2 years before I moved to Sarawak, and I sensed the stigma in Kuching. Sarawak itself, it's different. It's a bit more, I would say, I don't know, a bit more stigma in that sense, because not many people are receiving information or are getting education about what mental health really is. So that is a barrier for those conversations, you know, coming out and owning to say that, you know, I have mental health issues or I have struggles with this. It's pretty hard. So, you know, speaking from the experience where I work in a hospital, some people only come when it's really, 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 you know, at the brink. It's very severe, because it was difficult to come forward in the beginning. Yeah.
I mean, for both Laura and Michelle, this conversation, you guys basically work from the ground up, right? Creating the conversation first. Like Michelle was talking about, like 1,000 events in a given year, and I think Laura is, you know, creating this space for people to just come forward to talk about mental health. And is this something that you think people should do as early as from school? And you know, what do you guys think? Should it be as early as school, or when? When would be that time to just, you know, get people to start talking about it?
My view, as early as possible. I think we emphasize so much on physical health, and we don't emphasize enough on mental health. whereas there is, well, you need mental health to have physical health. If you speak to any psychologist or psychiatrist, they tell you how mental health does have an effect on your physical well-being as well. And so I think as early as possible, literally, I won't want to put an age to it. I think as early as a child is able to understand, I think we need to start the conversation there.
Well, we will look into that point in a following podcast where we'll be talking to educators and teachers. And I'm going to put that question forward and just to ask them, you know, like, should we start talking about mental health as early as maybe 12, 11 or 12, where they are able to understand about mental health and the vocabulary and the words associated, you know, with mental health and so on and so forth. But that's coming up, folks, in the next podcast where we will have conversations with educators. So stay tuned to our podcast. So we will now have a short break and we'll see you again in part two, where we will be talking about more about SJ Care Warriors, about MindBrew as a civic engagement where people get involved with the community, and that is the community who brought up the need for this conversation on mental health. So see us again in the second part.
You're listening to the MindBrew Chats podcast, bringing you stories and honest conversations about mental health, well-being, and life from Kuching, Sarawak. Grab your favorite brew and join us now.
Welcome back, folks. This is MindBrew Chats, Conversations with Community Champions. We have with us Laura, who is the founder of MindBrew Kuching, and also Michelle, who is the founder for SJ Care Warriors from Subang Jaya. Now, I'm going to start with you again, Michelle. Is there a memorable incident or event that happened, you know, after you set up SJ Care Warriors?
Yeah, so by this time, we've done quite a lot of advocacy work through community events. And there was this incident in one of the schools where one of the students was self-harming. And so this student told another student, her friend, his or her friend, who then told his or her parent, and whose parent told another parent. And so where it ended, so this parent's friend, she is heavily involved in community work, and she is part of the Residents Association, and she knows a lot of people, and she just loves dealing with the community. And so it was no surprise that she was referred to, and no surprise as well that she was also part of the PIBG. And so she has heard a lot of what we were doing and what we had to say about mental health and how it was important. And so immediately when she heard about self-harming, it linked in her mind that there might be some links with this person's mental health. And they called me up immediately and said, is there anything that we should do, you know? Is there someone that we can bring to talk more about this? So at least the students know about this thing called mental health, and, you know, that they need to take care of it and what they should do in cases where they feel that they feel like they need help. And I said, yeah, you know, I think I can arrange something for you. So even before we got to that stage, the PIBG actually went out and checked and found out that in that school, there was actually more than one student that was self-harming. And so that became a huge realization to them. And so we did arrange a talk for them. And this is where we got Dr. Chua Suk Ming, who is part of, actually the founder of Relate Malaysia, to come and speak in this school. And she did a fantastic job of bringing it and packaging it in their language. You know, you're talking to 13 to 17 year olds, and you can't go in with all these jargon and terminology. They would just get lost. And so she did a fantastic job. And the feedback after that was actually very surprising, because we did get some students who said that they didn't know about mental health, and they didn't know that they can actually get help if they faced that kind of situation, or that was in fact a function of having counseling teachers in school. So that did a good job of raising awareness, and I suppose it's a testament of how community empowerment does have its place and can go a long way. So really don't undermine the work that you are doing when it comes to raising awareness.
Just how many students are we talking about here that attended this talk?
Oh, I would say in that school, for that session, it was a full hall. So I'm estimating about 900 to 1,000 students.
And I'm quite surprised actually that the students voiced out that they did not know there was this thing called mental health, simply because it's an urban school and there is a lot more information and awareness on social media nowadays. It seems a lot of celebrities are talking about mental health. A lot of prominent influencers are talking about mental health. BTS is talking about mental health, but why do they not know that they can get help? I'm just curious, like, how did this situation come to be?
Yeah, I think that's quite interesting as well. I don't know whether the message reaches them. I'm not sure how, when it comes to celebrities talking about mental health, how they actually get their information disseminated and whether it actually reaches this target group. But what I do know is exactly what Hazel mentioned just now, which is that stigma is a real problem that we are dealing with in Malaysia. And I think there are so many factors aside from just the fear of being labeled as someone who has a problem, you know. And we have so many words that we ascribe to them, you know, we call them mental, you know, sakit akal. All these kind of cultural terms start coming in. But aside from that as well, unfortunately, there are features of our Asian upbringing which I feel unfortunately kind of concretize this whole problem that we have with stigma. Because I don't know about you, but me and my family and my peers, we grow up in families where the father shoulders a lot of the responsibility, and you don't get him talking about how he actually feels about it very much. And the mom as well, you know, so she goes through a lot and she feels that she has to shoulder the burden of the family without showing that it is difficult. And so I suppose that is the environment that we are all brought up in, but we don't really talk about our emotions or the struggles that we face. And so unconsciously, I suppose, as parents, as children, there is this expectation that you kind of have to get through it yourself. And so that feeds into the whole ecosystem.
Yeah, I agree so much with you, Michelle. And I felt that, you know, earlier when Mac was talking about how old do we start to kind of, you know, it's going to be another podcast on how old we should start educating children about mental health. I think it starts from the home. It starts from family, parents being example on how they deal with their mental health and encouraging and holding space for children to be okay with their own emotions and all that. And it's truly, you know, a systemic approach in that sense, you know, approach that is a big picture. It's not just one person per se, but really a whole village coming together to educate about mental health.
I think what's really key for people to understand is mental health issues does not mean you're insane. because insanity is a whole different thing as opposed to mental health issues. And the fact that people do not hear the message. And I think, Laura, you can attest to this, right? The people that attend MindBrew, some of them are seeking information. Some of them want to learn about mental health issues. Am I right on this?
Yeah, that's right, Mac. Because we have found that our demographic for MindBrew is about 18 to 35. And most of our participants are currently about 20-ish, between 20 and 30 years old. And they are different groups of them. Some of them are just curious. They really genuinely want to know, either for their own sake or because they have someone in their life whom they wish to support. And they want to know how to support this person. Some of them are already going through some issues that they cannot put a name to yet. And it just highlights that mental health is a spectrum. It's not like you are healthy, you are not healthy. It's not a black and white thing. All of us will fluctuate from very, very healthy 100% to having mental health issues, to having more severe problems that warrant professional intervention. But we're definitely all on the spectrum. I think for Malaysians, we have this issue also that we think that, mental health is somebody else's problem. It's not me. You know, I don't have a problem. I'm healthy. It's not true. It's a fundamental part of who we are. And we all have to understand that before we address stigma as well. Yeah.
Actually, that was a challenge that I felt, a very prominent one, in fact, when I embarked on this journey, because you have this blame game that is going on. So if assuming a child is affected, the teachers will say, oh, it's a problem at home, and the parents will say, no, it's a problem in school. And then they would say, oh, no, it's a problem with peer pressure. Oh, no, it's a problem with homework. And, you know, this kid is just facing too much pressure. So it's always someone else's problem. And that was where I felt the need as well in, raising awareness to also address this idea of that we have to come together as a collective responsibility. We all have a part to play. And in fact, I remember one incident actually where I was attending a community engagement. And so this is where we give updates about what my office is doing. And so we talked about SJ Care Warriors and why it is important. And I also highlighted the struggles that some students were facing in school. And I didn't know that in the crowd, there was actually a teacher who was listening. And that teacher felt compelled to take the mic during Q&A. And I understand where that teacher was coming from. And that teacher felt the need to, assure the parents that there's nothing wrong in school. I suppose that's how we have been hardwired after so many years, to be very defensive, because if your child is seen to, have mental health problems, and a school is seen as a contributor, it is seen as their fault, whereas it is not necessarily the case, right? And I think that's where we become defensive, and that's why we don't want to touch about that issue. And so we start blaming one another. I think as well, when it comes to the workplace, again, that also factors in where a lot of employers, number one, perhaps don't know how to deal with it. Number two, when it does happen, we find it difficult to acknowledge that there is something that we probably need to do better. And I suppose that's also something that we need to learn, because I think as a community, we kind of blame each other too much. I don't think we do enough to come around each other and say, what can we do better? It's not a you and me thing. I think we have to realize that it's an us thing. And so I think all the more reason where we do identify the need for improvement, that we come together and we say, come on, let's do this together. Let's see how we can improve. We've got each other's backs and we can get through it as long as we realize that we're all in this together.
I've got a thought here. You just said that people like to play the blame game, right?
The thing is, we're living in these very strange, troubling times. And essentially, it's no longer China's problem. It's no longer the US's problem. It's a global problem. And every single one of us has been impacted one way or the other. And every single one of us is going through some low-grade depression and anxiety at this point because there's so much uncertainty. So are we being forced to confront that we are all having mental health issues now and therefore there is nobody else to blame? What do you think?
I think the people who suffer from anxiety and depression suddenly feel that they are no longer alone in the world because everybody has anxious thoughts right now. Everybody's depressed over something, you know. So yeah, no, I think in a way we've all have been forced in that manner to confront what to me is basically human nature, which is very natural for us to feel anxious. It's very natural for us to be depressed over things. It's just that now everybody is feeling it for one particular point in all this, right? So so I guess that for now we are confronted with this need to talk about it. We are confronted with this need to find a place where we feel safe to tell someone that I'm anxious about this, I'm anxious about losing my job, I'm anxious about not being able to study properly. I'm depressed because I don't have enough money to buy the necessities and things like that, you know. So we now need to find avenues of people to talk to and about these concerns, you know. And in this, I see, you know, the role that SJK Warriors have, the role that Mindbrew has, where, you know, people can just come into this space and just talk, you know. And but then I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like mental health issues is not just tackling one issue, right? It's not just tackling one trigger, so to speak. But listening to Michelle and listening to Laura, like, there's so many reasons why people have issues, right? And I'm just going to turn to Hazel because she's the qualified psychologist in this group, right? So I mean, come on, Hazel, how do you describe this? I mean, there's so many issues that could cause someone to have, you know, a mental health crisis.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Mac, this could be another podcast on its own. Yeah, but technically, you know, especially after coming to Sarawak, I noticed that mental health is so much more complicated than just that person having difficulties coping and whatnot. You know, we talk about accessibility to healthcare. This impacts mental health. We talk about poverty and poverty that causes, you know, teenage pregnancy, child marriages, all these things affect someone's mental health because it's not just their inability to deal with those issues, but it's more of like, you know, where are they at that point? What resources do they have? So one particular story that impacted me while I was working was when you know, because substance abuse is also considered mental health issues, mental health disorder. So one of the case that I deal with was a person that had substance abuse. And while interviewing the family, what impacted me was this. We try our best to, you know, rehabilitate him. We try to get him out of drug. But when you hear the reason why he's taking drugs, it's because he is trying to sustain 3 jobs to fend for his family. So you rehabilitate him, you put him back to the same environment where he has to fend for his family still. What other choice, you know, does he have? So I felt that mental health is not just one thing. Mental health is interconnected to other factors in life as well. Physical health, social health, and you know, your environment and all that. That's my take. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. I mean, and looking at what Laura and Michelle are doing, they're basically going back to the community and creating that awareness among the community that, look, guys, this is something we need to talk about. And they're advocating a platform for them to talk about. And cycling back to you, Michelle, SJK Warriors is in fact a community-led initiative, right? I mean, it's from the bottom up. And I'm listening to the story earlier on, it was the community that came forward to see you to bring up this idea. You know, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, this is the community itself, right, who are interested to know or to tackle mental health issues.
Yeah, I suppose you can consider me lucky that there was this group of people that unknowingly was around me who decided to come around and say, we want to take this further. It had such great inputs to bring us to where we are today. So I suppose the challenge we had then was realizing that we are, number one, not professional. So we have no technical knowledge about how it is like, how many types of mental health issues are there, how do you deal with them. You know, we're not professionally trained, and so the immediate question that we had to answer was, what do we do? And we felt that aside from raising awareness, there was also this knowledge gap that we wanted to fill. So we came to a point where the community said, okay, we know about this thing called mental health, we know that it is important, but where we are at now, we don't know how to deal with it. What do I do if I have someone in my family that needs support? What do I do if I meet someone who expresses that they intend to, you know, take their own life? And I do feel this need to help them. It's just that it's complicated because I don't know whether what I would say or what I would do would have a counterproductive effect of driving a person further away from where they are. And I don't want at the same time to breach this confidentiality that I have with this person, because, you know, there is this fear that, okay, this person has opened up to me, but at the same time, if I were to say, look, let's go and get help immediately, will this person suddenly get turned off and then, you know, have this distrust immediately built against me, and then I would lose that door that took so much out of this person to open up to me. And so there was this conversation going on, and then we realized that, okay, let's see what we can do about that. And then we realized that perhaps the way forward is empowerment, it's education. So we took that a step further. And that's where, we started talking to Mr. Pekai Shrem, we started talking to Dr. Tan and Dr. Intan, which were also part of Utah, and started formulating a suicide prevention module as well as a resilience training module where we use this to empower the community. And the idea at that time as well was, we didn't want to duplicate efforts. There was really good work that was already being done by so many NGOs, and you had so many platforms. So we didn't want to compete. In fact, we wanted to streamline and we wanted to fill gaps. And so we felt that instead of going into this realm where, you know, there were already so many groups providing affordable mental health care, you know, you can pay like 50, 30 ringgit, to have a session with a clinical psychologist. And so that gap was being filled. There was a lot of very, very good advocacy work that were being done by so many NGOs in different spheres. There was call lines, you know, befrienders already had theirs. And then you started having all of those in different languages. And we felt that, no, we don't want to do that. People are doing a good job. And what we should be doing instead is opening up another door and see how much of an impact that would have. And if we do come by cases that need that type of support, so for example, people who are not aware of affordable psychiatric care or psychological care, then we would channel them to NGOs or organizations that are already doing that work. Or like, for example, if, you know, for example, Miasa is very niche. They do a lot of work with the Muslim community. And so they have a very targeted, very tailored approach. And that's not something that many NGOs do. So if we do come across someone that we feel would benefit from that type of work, we channel it to them and vice versa. And so that created a very organic network where we occupy different spaces and create this symbiotic relationship. So if, for example, they come across people that feel need to be empowered through education, that would benefit from a resilience training program, that would do good with a suicide prevention program, then they would say, why don't you speak to SG Care Warriors about it? And so there is this understanding that we have built, and we find that it is very productive because you avoid duplication, and it becomes very efficient because you have NGOs doing their best in a space that they have created for themselves.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Building Resilience Program? What who is it for, and how is it carried out?
Yeah, so the Resilience Training Program is actually it was crafted by Dr. Tan and Dr. Intan of Utah, and what it is a 1-day workshop where they bring you through different modules. And the objective of it is to transform our thinking from being very problem-focused to more solution-oriented. And so there'll be different activities that will be done throughout the day towards that direction, and conversations that will be had in between to facilitate that, you know, where the facilitator will guide you through perhaps what you were thinking at the time when this exercise was given to you. If it is a group exercise, you know, what were the conversations that you were having then? You know, how did that inform the decision that you finally came to come to this solution? Were there other solutions that you thought of, you know, and how did you test and, you know, troubleshoot them and overcome them to bring them to the solution that you have now? And how do you then apply it in your daily life? How do you use that when you face a roadblock or a challenge in your relationships, in the work that you do, in education, in your finances? Don't you think that these skills too can apply when you face those problems as well? And so it becomes very empowering because you would have an activity that would stick in that person's mind, and they would constantly remember that they have actually done it before. And in the same way, they can do it again, although the situation that they face is a little bit different. And so what we had done was, you know, utilize the different universities that are available in Subang Jaya and go into them and say, look, this is what we want to do. Are you interested? And would you be able to get a group of students who might benefit from this exercise to come and join us? And we do it entirely free. It is funded by my office, so we pay the facilitators for their transport, for their food. You know, the space is sponsored by the university, so it's a partnership, and that's how it just takes off. Yeah,
I find that the structure of the program that you describe is I wish I had gone through it, because the thing is, school doesn't prepare you for anything. It doesn't prepare you for life. It just prepares you to take exams. For myself, I left home at 17 to go to KL to study, because that was what everyone did back then. And I remember being very overwhelmed. I didn't know how to do life. I only knew how to do study. These kind of skills are very, very much needed, because the inability to do life to adult is what causes a lot of stress. It causes a lot of mental health stress and mental health issues.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And in fact, part of what we are doing is to fine-tune the modules that we have, and in a way prove that it can be done and there's a necessity for it. The hope is that it will, that, you know, people up there and, you know, I as a backbencher hope that the government will actually take it on and allow it to be more widespread than what it is now. So what I am doing is basically utilizing the platform that I have to prove that this solution in a way works and it's worth investing in.
What's fantastic here is that you not only touch base with the community, like your constituents, but rather also the community of mental health NGOs and people who are already advocating looking into mental health issues, right? So it's kind of like building this huge community of, you know, where everybody can get involved in one way or another, you know, and that's fantastic. And I think for Michelle, your role as assemblywoman puts you in that position where you can galvanize everybody together, you know, to work towards a common cause. And that's fantastic, you know, in that sense. For both Michelle and Laura, right, where do you see yourselves 5 years from now, like in terms of your work with Mindbrew and SJ Warriors? Laura, you want to go first?
Oh, at the moment, Mindbrew is, I would say, a very niche, very localized initiative. It's based in Kuching because we are all here. I would hope to see it replicated across Sarawak at least, because a lot of our content, we're trying to make it very localized, we're trying to make it relevant to our local community, at least in the urban settings. To expand to a rural setting is an entirely different ballgame, and I hope to figure it out somewhere down the line. But Mindbrew as a community, as something that can be quite easily set up, as long as you have the passion to do it, you have some skills and some materials that we from Mindbrew Kuching can provide you with. You are essentially able to set it up anywhere and everywhere, whether it's in a church youth group setting, it's in your own school, or it's with a couple of your own friends and their friends, so on and so forth. Our aim is to make it easy, to make mental health accessible, digestible, something that people can easily set up and learn to talk about. We don't want it to be scary, we don't want it to be academic, we don't want it to be clinical, but we want people to understand the first step of understanding a mental health, someone with mental health issues, or to understand your own mental health issues, is to open up and talk and listen.
Yeah,
that's it.
Fantastic. What about you, Michelle, 5 years from now?
Yeah, I suppose we have a similar vision as Mindbrew, in the sense that we hope one day that these programs that we have is scalable and implementable by literally everyone who is interested, where you can set up chapters of your own and implement it in your community. Like what Laura said, we are also facing similar challenges where Subang Jaya admittedly is a very urban setting, and the level of awareness would admittedly again be very different in different places across the country. So then the question is, how do you ensure that this program is sufficiently flexible for it to be implemented in all types of settings, or it has sufficient room for it to be tailored without losing its content? So we want communities to be empowered, and we want communities to be interested in taking this up, in doing education, in doing suicide prevention, and also resilience training. The icing on the cake would be if government takes it up and implements it. I mean, that is the dream, right? Where they go, look, you have done it, it works, can we just take it and use it? To which we would definitely say, please, like literally now, even if they come, we'll be like, please just do it, because there's, yeah, literally that, because there's such a need. And that's all we want to do. There's no proprietary over knowledge. You just need to get it done, because the number of people that need to know this is fast, and number of people who don't perhaps is even bigger. And all we want to do is just to get the message out there. And if government says, we like the work that you are doing, we want in on it, can we just use it? We will say, please do. By all means, it is long overdue, and it is time that we get this out on a larger scale.
Yeah, and you know, coming from a professional point of view, community initiatives are so important, because as professionals, we sometimes do not reach the people. We are not able to speak their language. We do not understand their culture. And I like how MyBrew and SJ Care Warriors are both thinking about allowing different communities, empowering them to be the one that, you know, advocate for mental health and speak up for mental health in their own areas, because they would understand their population better. They would understand the people they're dealing with much better, much, much better than the professionals even. That's my thought.
Yep, we have come to this end of our podcast, where we can sum up by saying that mental health is actually a community effort, and we need champions like Laura, like Michelle, who create this awareness, who create this point of reference for the community to just come together to address the mental health issues they have within the communities, and that the mental health issues are very much in a way tailored to that particular community, because the issues are, you know, it's so vast. Different communities have different problems that they need to tackle, and it has to be tailored in that sense. Any last words from Michelle?
Yeah, I suppose thank you so much for having me and being a part of this and getting the message out there. We love the work that you guys are doing. We love the work that MyBrew is doing. And we hope that you will scale to greater heights. Yeah.
Hi. Laura?
Thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on the show. We really appreciate you coming and telling us about the work that SJK Warriors has been doing. And hearing about this work, it gives me so much hope, because it's an excellent example of how a community can come together and try to collectively solve a problem, an impossible problem. Because the thing is, as normal people, as ordinary citizens, we very often feel, hey, this problem, I know we've got to do something about it, but I have no money, I have no power, I have no influence. What can I do? But with mental health, there's so much. There's so much that you can do at the individual level, or even just as a member of a residence association, a PIBG, or a social club that runs together, does Tai Chi together. You can educate yourself. You can educate yourself about mental health, about mental health disorders, about where you can get help, and where you can, how you can support someone who is going through distress. What to say, what not to say. Very often we see people shutting down other people with toxic positivity, with the best of intentions. Don't think so negative. Be positive. There's a rainbow after the rain. Or they send someone to a priest, a faith healer, a bomo, instead of sending them to the right place to get help. And that is something that we can solve with more education, more awareness, more openness, and the destigmatization of mental health, where people can actually talk about it openly. And the time to do that is now. There's no more critical time than now. We are going through a global pandemic, and we're going to be seeing record numbers of people coming forward with mental health issues. Think of people who are going through financial uncertainty, they've lost their jobs, or they've lost loved ones. Or, you know, our frontliners, not just healthcare workers, who are going through burnout, people who are essential workers who have been working so hard throughout this quarantine period, our educators, please, big shout out to our teachers who have been trying to struggle through alternating online classes and physical classes and keeping the spirits of our young ones up. Our grocery store workers, our cleaners, you know, all these people who have been going through so much stress. And in line with this year's World Mental Health Day team, Mental Health for All, Greater Investment, Greater Access. Our policymakers and our governments, they need to look into how to increase mental health support services, how to increase the number of trained personnel, how to make sure that everyone who has a problem, a mental health issue, they can get the help that they need, they can get the support that they need. And that is my hope for us going forward.
Fantastic. So, Hazel, any last words from you?
I really love community initiatives. I am a big believer of community resilience. I feel that they are the people who are able to work hand in hand to make mental health something that is available, accessible, and even knowable. Is that a word? knowable to people. My hope is that I hope to live in a country and a community that one day will treat mental health as an equal to physical health. Because, you know, there people say health is wealth, but there's no health without mental health, isn't it?
And there you have it, folks. You have been listening to Mindbrew Chats, conversation with community champions. We had the privilege of having both Michelle Ng, who is the assemblywoman for Subang Jaya, and she is the founder for SJK Warriors, and Laura Koh, who is the founder of Mindbrew Kuching, on our show. Look us up on our socials. We are Mindbrew Chats. So you can find us on Instagram, on Facebook, and of course, tune in to our next podcast. We are available on Spotify, where we will have conversations with educators. So that's an interesting one there. So with that, folks, this is MacLean. I'm signing off. See you guys in the next podcast. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Mindbrew Chats. Find out more about Mindbrew on our social media platforms at Mindbrew KCH. That's Mindbrew KCH on Instagram and Facebook. Don't forget to like and subscribe for future updates.